Can we start by just introducing all of us instead of Bob, because Bob is not here?
Good afternoon. My name is Claire Horton. I'm from Fiscal Policy within Provincial Treasury.
Good afternoon. My name is Ndoda Nandileya, Fiscal Policy, Provincial Treasury.
Good afternoon. And I'm Selima, Public Policy Service.
Thank you. Deirdre Barton, Chair Hoyner, member on my left.
Andrikus van der Beeste, member of the committee. Andrikus.
Hi, I'm Terry Kamerika. As the chairperson was saying, that I'm an alternate member, I'm saying in vote to Mr. Mitchell. Honourable Mitchell.
Molweni, igama lam ndingunomi Nkonzo, ndililungu lale komiti.
Okay. So today we'll be dealing with a briefing by the service providers on the outcomes of the probity report, as well as the process leading up to the shortlisting of the candidates for all the vacancies on the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. I'm not sure if the department wants to do both in one, or do a separate process leading up to the vacancies and separate the probity report. Once it comes to the probity report, whether you have separately or together, you can indicate to me, and then I will request from the committee to close the meeting, because the probity report contains the personal details of persons in this process. So maybe just an indication how you would prefer to do the presentation, and we can decide on that. So we'll then do the, first we'll do the process leading up to the shortlisting of the candidates. Then once we're done with that, we might just get a specific information from the department that's on the probity report. Then I will put the question to the committee to whether we can close the committee meeting to discuss the probity report.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to go through the process that has led up to this meeting. I think it may be useful just to start in terms of some of the acts and the regulations, those sections that detail the process that we need to follow, or that this committee also needs to follow in terms of appointing board members. The process to appoint board members to the Gambling Board, or the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board, is governed by the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Act of 1996, as amended, and its accompanying regulations. In terms of the Act, the composition of the board consists of 7 board members, appointed on a part-time basis by the Executive Council in accordance with the prescribed procedure, which shall provide for public participation in the nomination of candidates for appointment, provided that the Standing Committee of the Provincial Legislature responsible for this Act shall evaluate all candidates as to their suitability for appointment. There's also provision in terms of the members of the board shall be eligible persons who have appropriate knowledge or experience, provided that appointments to the board shall be made with gender sensitivity. In terms of Section 4, which details eligibility for appointment as member or employee of the board. In order to be eligible as a member of the board, you must be a natural person, be of the age of 25, be a citizen of the Republic and ordinarily reside in the province, be a fit and proper person, be of good financial standing, and would not be disqualified in terms of the provisions under Section 5. And I'm just going to take you through now in terms of Section 5. Disqualification for appointment. The following person shall be disqualified. If you've been convicted of an offence in terms of this Act or any similar law, if you've been convicted of theft, fraud, forgery, the uttering of a forged document, perjury, or any offence under the Corruption Act of 1992, and unrehabilitated insolvent, removed from any office of trust on account of misconduct or dishonesty, a political office bearer, anyone, whether personally or through a spouse, family member, partner or associate, have a direct or indirect financial interest in gambling, business or establishment, or has an interest in business or enterprise that may conflict or interfere with the performance of their duties as a board member. The next section just deals in terms of what the regulations stipulate, the process that needs to be followed. The designated accounting officer within the provincial treasury shall by notice publish in each of the official languages of the province, in the provincial gazette and other printed media. And typically we would publish in the gazette, but we would also publish in the English and Afrikaans Weekend Argus and Die Burger, as well as the Mail and Guardian. It's a typical media we follow, as well as we also publish in Vukani, the Isikhosa newspaper. So the accounting officer would advertise for nominations of candidates to be a member of the board. The nomination would need to contain the names, address, telephone number and curriculum vitae of a nominee, and that should be submitted within 14 days of the advertisement being placed. Once we've received all these applications, the other thing I just want to note, in terms of broadening the pool of possible candidates that we can tap into, we also use the jobs portal on the provincial government website. We have used that portal, but being explicit that this is not a job, this is a board member position. But we also use that portal in terms of expanding our coverage of possible applicants. The accounting officer shall place at the disposal of each nominee an application form that needs to be returned within 21 days once it's been placed at the applicant's disposal. The application needs to be accompanied by a signed declaration stating willingness to disclose full details of personal and financial affairs, statement signed by the applicant that they comply with the provisions of Section 4 of the Act in order to be eligible for appointment. Failure to submit a completed application form renders an application invalid. After expiry of the application period, the accounting officer shall, in each of the official languages of the published in the province, publish in the provincial gazette and other printed media a notice specifying the names and addresses of each nominee who has submitted a valid application, and provide a 14-day period for comment on the suitability of those nominees that have completed their application form. So we would do that in the same media as which we ask for applications, except with the jobs portal we don't do that because it's a different kind of portal, but we do it in the provincial gazette as well as all the newspapers that we have published the call for nominations. Then the next step that needs to be followed is that the designated accounting officer shall evaluate each application referred to in Regulation 3.3 and compile a short list of not less than 15 names in respect of any vacancy occurring on the board or not less than 3. In other words, if it was a new board, you would have to present this committee with at least 15 names. Otherwise, it should be 3 names for each vacancy that exists. Of the most suitable candidates for appointment, provided that the designated accounting officer may request such additional information or documentation regarding an applicant's personal and financial affairs as he or she may deem necessary to evaluate the application. The shortlist referred to in sub-regulation 1, as well as the comprehensive list of all applications together with all available information and documentation regarding their personal and financial affairs, and any public comment received in terms of regulation 3.6 shall be submitted for consideration to the Standing Committee of the Provincial Legislature responsible for the law. The relevant standing committee shall, within 7 days from receiving this documentation, referred to in sub-regulation 2, submit a final shortlist of not less than 15 names or in respect of any vacancy occurring on the board of not less than 3 names, together with a comprehensive list of all applicants to the responsible member for submission for consideration to the Executive Council. The designated accounting officer shall, upon receipt of a resolution of the Executive Council concerning the successful candidate, inform all the applicants of the outcome. The Provincial Treasury was also requested, and I'm giving feedback now, in terms of legal advice on two questions. So we sought the legal advice and we just captured the advice obtained. The first question that we asked for legal advice was whether the standing committee is required or permitted to interview candidates as part of the process to fill vacancies on the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. And this is capturing the advice that we obtained from legal services, stated as follows: both the Act and the regulations are silent with regards to the process employed by the Standing Committee in evaluating candidates nominated for appointment on the board. Nevertheless, it is clear that the Standing Committee is required to evaluate all candidates in respect of their suitability for appointment. The manner to be employed by the Standing Committee in evaluating candidates is not prescribed. Neither the Act nor the regulations dictate that the Standing Committee must interview candidates, nor does it prohibit the Standing Committee from interviewing candidates. All that is required is that the Standing Committee evaluates the candidates and submits a short list of no less than the amount referred to in Regulation 4.3 and within the time frames referred to in the Regulation 4.3. The second question that we obtained legal advice on, whether the recruitment and selection process may be undertaken prior to the expiry of term of board members' term of office. In terms of Section 7 of the Act, a vacancy in the office of a member of a board occurs immediately when a member dies, resigns, is disqualified, is absent without permission from board meetings, the term of office expires, and where the term of office is terminated by the Executive Council. There is nothing in the Act or regulation that prescribes when the process for the filling of a vacant post should begin. While not all vacancies on the board can be foreseen, a vacancy as a result of a term of office expiring is predictable as the date of termination is known. From an efficiency perspective, it would therefore make sense to commence with the process of filling the predicted vacancy prior to the post becoming vacant. The process of commencing with the filling of a predicted vacant position can commence prior to the position becoming vacant. The offer, however, can only be made to the candidate once the requirements in terms of the Act and regulations have been complied with and the position is actually vacant. So now I'm just going to take the members through the current process in terms of the applicants that this committee would need to make a decision on. The call for nominations was placed in accordance with Regulation 3.1 in the Provincial Gazette, Bukhani, the Mail and Guardian, De Burger, and Weekend Argus on 26, 27 and 28 July 2018. In addition, the call for nominations was placed on the Provincial Government Jobs Portal. A total of 272 eligible nominations were received. In accordance with Regulation 3.3, applications forms were sent to all eligible nominees. 48 applications were returned. Regulation 3.6 requires the publication of the names and addresses of each nominee who has submitted a valid application form. The closure date for comment regarding the suitability for appointment was the 31st of January 2019, and no comment was received. Applicants who indicated an address outside of the Western Cape were requested to respond to a number of questions. Provincial Treasury, having received on a previous occasion a legal opinion from legal service, applied the criteria below with which to determine ordinarily resident. The Standing Committee of Finance is requested to consider the responses provided by the applicants in determining their ordinarily resident status to the following questions: the nature and cause of the applicant's physical presence within an area of business or employment, the average length of stay within an area outside of the Western Cape, whether the applicant's family reside and or children attend school in the Western Cape, whether the applicant intends to return to the Western Cape after a short absence, where the applicant considers their dwelling or residence, home and belongings to be. And these set of questions were actually received in terms of guidance from a legal opinion which we had obtained. I'm just now going to take the members briefly through in terms of the profile of current board members.
Do you want this to be public?
I think this is fine because this is the current board members. It's fine. There's nothing confidential here. As the committee is aware, the board comprises of 7 board members. We currently have 5 of these board members' positions filled. Mr. LeCay is the chairperson, and his term of office will expire in December 2020. Mr. Bassaday, whose office expires in March 2020. Mr. Farquhar, also, whose term of office expires March 2020. Ms. Farney, whose term of office expires in May 2020, and Ms. Magazi, whose term of office expires in June 2020. The intention of this process is to fill 4 vacancies. The 2 vacancies that are terminating first in terms of their term of office being the ones that are expiring in March 2020, as well as the 2 vacancies that currently exist. I think it's useful to note at this stage that the intention was actually to have filled these vacancies earlier, but because of the term of office of the previous parliament coming to an end, that standing committee thought it useful that this committee rather make that determination. And in terms of the legislation, as it is currently written, we are able to extend a term of office up to a maximum of 4 years. In other words, a board member can be appointed for a period of 4 years. Typically, the process to date has been that Cabinet would appoint a board member generally for a period of 3 years, and we have the option to extend it by up to a further year, but within that 4-year period. So we were able to make use of that option to extend the term of office of certain board members. Okay, so what will happen once 2 of the board members' term of office terminates or expires in March next year is in terms of altering the dynamics what we currently have in terms of the board. So currently 2 board members have financial and accounting qualifications. 1 board member has legal qualifications and experience. 2 board members have public entity board experience and general administration. So the term of the office or a term of office of 2 board members reduces the number of persons with legal experience. We would have nobody with legal experience, but also in terms of the number of people with governance experience. And as I stated just now, the current process aims to fill 4 vacancies, two of which are vacant already. As I said, we've only got 5 filled. And 2 are upcoming vacancies. Okay, in terms of the shortlisting criteria applied, currently the Act provides very little in terms of guidance of how we should go about shortlisting. However, Section 3.2 provides that members of the board shall be eligible persons who have appropriate knowledge or experience, provided that appointment to the board shall be made with gender sensitivity. We have considered candidates with appropriate knowledge and experience, as well as gender representation, including disability. I think it's important at this stage that the Standing Committee should note the following. 1 application, Mr. Berger, did indicate a potential indirect connection to the LPM, or limited payout machine operator industry, and I don't think it's yet. So I think it's just the committee would need to consider if this is a potential conflict of interest. And likewise, 3 applicants have indicated an address outside of the Western Cape, and we'd similarly like this committee to make a determination with regards to their status. Okay, I think this maybe is now. We would like to close it from now.
Committee members,
I would like to put the question to the committee if we could please resolve that this is a closed meeting so that we can discuss the personal particulars of the shortlisted candidates, please.
Okay, can I ask, because I would like us to limit the closed session only to when we discuss personal information, etc., that you perhaps give us an opportunity first to pose any questions that we might have, and then only when we move over to the consideration of the candidates that we then go to camera.
I was going to take all the questions until the end, but Honourable Kunle, you want to say something?
No, I wanted to support the member in the proposal. Thank you.
Okay. So is it okay if we just ask you some questions on the procedure first, and then what we'll do is we'll put in the motion, okay? Honourable Van Wester, Honourable Kondlo after this, and then Honourable Amelita.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think one must accept that in the legislation, minimum criteria are prescribed, but that in considering the most suitable candidates, that one would also be considering other factors. Now, can I say, I was fortunate to serve in the National Assembly on the Portfolio Committee for Trade and Industry when the gambling legislation and the National Lotteries Board was also considered by that committee. And when you read the legislation, you find that, for example, in terms of the National Lotteries Board, you also want people with the necessary knowledge that will promote, you know, the turnover of the National Lotteries Board, etc. So you're looking for people also with general business acumen, etc. You are looking for people with experience, you know, specifically in that area. And I'm just asking myself, what other considerations would we be able to deduct from the legislation when we look at the Western Cape Act, but also in general, when, you know, what are the aims of the board? Are the general aims, what is the current vision of the board? Because obviously, if two candidates both possess the same qualifications, etc., there might be other considerations which might indicate to us that one candidate might be a preferred candidate above another. So that's my first question, if we could be assisted in that way. The second one is, we need to submit a list after this meeting. Do we have any indication of whether it should be a ranked list? Is the list of people meeting just the minimum criteria? Can we express an order of preference, etc.? So, Chair, if we could just get the department's view on these issues, thank you.
Before I take on the room control, in your pack, and it was emailed to us all as well, I requested two opinions, one procedural, one legal. One of the questions I asked in the legal opinion is whether the name should be ranked. And our legal opinion from the provincial side indicated that we should just submit the pool of names that we want in our recommendation after the interviews for us to consider to the Minister for Executive Council. I know it's long list. And if they have the opportunity to choose out of who we recommend, they would like to appoint.
No, thanks, Chair. The first question I just wanted to ask, and thanks for the presentation and process. One, can you clarify to me I think the clause you referred to in your first slide about what's the meaning of gender sensitivity in real terms, and how do you measure and verify such as a very broad and ambiguous statement? And then again, the gap that you have indicated around the silence of the Act itself, on the role and the actual involvement of the committee in the process of appointment, leaves me a bit paralyzed of what, in terms of the intention, you know, is our engagement, if indeed from the original, the actual original powers that this particular standing committee is supposed to derive from, there isn't much clarity, you know, about such. Because if there are particular responsibilities, for example, as you related to the ordinarily resident, you know, and the others, as the chair was referring of recommending, you know, so some are stipulated, some were there. Now, how do we, and I'm asking you, perhaps it's supposed to be a conversation for us as the committee, of how do we try and close this gap in legislation? Because it's one thing to have a standing committee, you know, to have some parts of the role, but the role, the actual role is not clarified, not defined from the Act itself. So I think for me, I think that is the issue. The last one, and educate me here, and I want to provide the disclaimer that I'm not quite averse on the gambling board and its business much. I would assume, just as a standard practice, is that the appointments, are they not done at the same time? We spoke about a 4 and a 3 year, and now we're at a situation where we're supposed to be, you know, filling vacancies. And what's the rationale of not doing that in such a manner, so that you've got people appointed at the same time and completing a particular period of service, you know, and what's the rationale of this particular model than the other one, you know, that is normally used? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. The positive presentation was that 48 individuals returned on your call for applications. You have provided us with a COVID report of only 13 candidates. I'd like to know, in terms of, you know, I know the criteria is pretty set out in the Act as to who should be appointed, whether those criteria are strictly applied, because in terms of compiling this short list that they have presented us with now, we don't know who the other applicants are. And in terms of one of the criteria is that a potential appointee or needs to be a fit and proper person. Could you just give clarity in terms of what criteria are you applying to evaluate whether a candidate is a fit and proper person? And then furthermore, in addition to that, one other criteria is that anyone who has at any time been removed from any office of trust on account of misconduct or dishonesty, how did you establish that, you know, in terms of evaluating the potential candidate? That's all for now.
I have, if you look at the legal opinion, you'll see that I have the same question that Honourable Mkonso had about we're appointing two now immediately and we're appointing two for 2020. And one of my questions was, why not appoint the two now and just appoint everyone from 2020 in the process? But I'm also cognizant of the fact that we use public money for this process. So maybe you can just give us more clarity on that point that Honourable Mkonso raised as well. Before the meeting, that the legislation speaks of not more than two legal qualifications. Maybe if you can just give us a bit of clarity on that, maybe if you perhaps know the intention behind that. And then my last Previously in the legal opinion, I asked about the various places where you advertise, but you have clarified that for me. Thank you.
Just another one. Of the people that are still on the shortlist, have you recently checked whether they are still interested in taking up these positions? I obviously wouldn't like us to shortlist people that have personal circumstances have changed to such an extent that they actually should no longer be on that list, taking into account the time lapse.
Thank you. I'm going to try and take it in terms of the order at which the questions came, and I will give my best in terms of answering them. The minimum criteria prescribed, and it's going to link to that question, I think, in terms of where you're saying two legal qualifications. My understanding is that that section of the Act is no longer in force, and there is no detail other than what I provided in the presentation in terms of suitable qualifications and experience. It doesn't unpack in terms of how many legal requirements, legal experience, etc., or financial. That no longer is applicable, that's been repealed from this Act and regulations. But that doesn't mean that we cannot consider it in terms of how we go about shortlisting. And I just described the process in terms of which we follow as opposed to what the legal said, because it's actually silent in terms of that. We have a board that exists already with five members, and what we know the kind of skill set that board needs in terms of, as you correctly said, what is the vision of this board, what is its purpose. I think that's a very important place to start in terms of answering. And I've just got, unfortunately, I can show it on the screen if you want, in terms of the board's APP, and maybe that will be of some assistance in terms of answering the question. The vision of the gambling board is to be the leading gambling, I'm sorry, I'm not the best person with IT, so I hope you can read it. I'm going to try and make it slightly bigger. No, it doesn't help. But it's to be the leading gambling and racing regulator authority in Africa. Its mission is to control and regulate gambling and racing within the province of the Western Cape. I don't want to touch too many things and then I suddenly lose everything here. To control and regulate gambling and racing within the province of the Western Cape that will provide a stable, just, consistent and effective regulatory environment. Inspire public confidence and trust in an environment free from corruption and unlawful gambling and racing activities and contribute to the economy of the Western Cape in a socially responsible manner. And then it goes to unpack the values in terms of the office of the board and the board members itself. So that's just at a very high level in terms of what the board is expected to do. So basically the board is responsible for the renewal and awarding of gambling licenses, taking into account the various probity investigations that are conducted by the office of the board, and also to ensure that gambling is conducted within the regulatory framework of the province. That's at a very high level in terms of what board members are expected to do. So as I said, the legislation, unfortunately, is very silent in terms of what should this board member typically look like. It's very little detail. It says, as the honourable member pointed out, gender sensitivity. What does that mean? I must be honest, it's not defined in terms of this Act, and this Act was written in 1996, so it's quite a bit of old legislation, and if need be, we can obtain a legal opinion in terms of what is the intention of this gender sensitivity, in terms of how we should note it. But what we do take note of is in terms of how people declare themselves in terms of their demographic profile. So we take that on value. As the person says, I am a female or I'm a male. We take it on face value as what they've described themselves
the form does ask those kind of questions. It asks your age, your gender, your population group, those kind of things. So we take it on face value as somebody has declared in the application form. So coming to, we have a board that comprises of 7 board members, and we have board members coming in and out at different times, so we try to get a spread of people in terms of their demographic profile, but also in terms of what they can bring in terms of experience and knowledge. So the kind of things we would typically look for is a representative who has experience from the social sector, whether it's been an NGO or that kind of environment that they've come from. Somebody who's got legal experience, because it is a very legalistic environment, the gambling environment, and there's lots of litigation that affects the gambling industry. So we do like to have the board made up of somebody who has got legal experience. It's also very much a finance kind of orientated environment, so we look for somebody with finance experience. And increasingly we are noticing that the gambling market itself is changing, and it's very much IT driven. So we typically try to find somebody who's also quite skilled in that. Unfortunately, it's often quite difficult to attract all these kind of skill sets in terms of the people that apply. So in broad, that's the kind of scope of criteria in terms of the profile of the person that we look for in terms of those that have submitted an application form. then in terms of the question asked, well, you've only got 13, the findings from 13 individuals. What happens is we then take as the criteria as I've described in terms of IT, and this, there will be a slide which I'm not showing, but there is a slide that we can provide more detail in terms of the scoring, how we've scored the 13 individuals. So we've cut the 48 down to 13 in terms of a ranking criteria that we will show afterwards in terms of scoring, and those individuals we then send out for probity to verify that everything they've indeed told us is the truth, and there's nothing that we need to be alerted to. And that's why you've only got 13, and also it's quite an expensive exercise to do so. So that's why we do go through an initial process of looking in terms of the suitability of candidates. Also in terms of the legislation, it indicates to us that we need to give the standing committee, you know, names of 3 individuals for each vacancy that we want to fill. So we do that to ensure that there is. The intention of this process, as I indicated, is to fill 4 vacancies. Obviously, the standing committee may interview the individuals or whatever process you want to follow in terms of identifying a suitable candidate. I'm not saying you have to interview. Whatever the committee decides is the most appropriate process. You may decide that there's nobody suitable. It's hypothetically possible. It's unlikely, but it's an outcome that could occur, that you feel that there really is absolutely nobody suitable, or you could only find 2 people. But that's for this committee to make that determination, because that lies within your responsibilities. Okay, the gender sensitivity, as I say, there is no definition. If this committee feels that we need to obtain a definition in terms of gender sensitivity, what does that actually mean? We would have to ask the legal services for it. We're just taking it on face value as a person has indicated in the application form. There's no way that we can determine, you know, in terms of that. And in terms of the regulation, the application form is currently contained in the regulations, so we need to adhere to what that application form currently looks like. In terms of the why do we not fill all the applicants at the same time, it's obviously as this process has evolved, as new board members, maybe some board members historically have left at different times, and hence there will be a staggered approach. Not everybody would be appointed on exactly the same day or same period every time. The previous minister also took the decision, and as I say, the practice has been In terms of the Act, we can appoint somebody for a period of 4 years. The practice has been that we appoint somebody for 3 years with the option of extending for another year. And typically we would do that to create a bit of space in the system for us, but also we like to have a degree of continuity in the board, because given the nature of what they are regulating, it's quite a complex field, gambling, and we like to have a bit of new blood in the system, but also a lot of experience at the same time, so that there's a bit of mentoring also happening in the board. But that just helps with the continuity of the board in terms of decisions taken and things like that. So it's really in terms of, from a practical perspective, not to have a completely new board at one time. Because it's a process, you know, licenses are happening quite frequently in terms of their renewal and factors that need to be considered by the board, because the board does meet once a month. So it's just in terms of for consistency, continuity, experience, etc. The decision, though, that was taken by the previous minister was because we had board vacancies arising, and the term of the previous parliament was coming to an end, he did not want to impose that board necessarily on the new committee or the new cabinet, etc. So that's why some of the terms of office were for a shorter period than we normally would have done. But because we couldn't fill the vacancies and the previous standing committee had decided it was better to hang over the decision making to a new committee, given that we were literally sitting right near the end of their period, that we extended certain board members, two board members, so that we at least have a board that is quorate, and to be quorate, that board has to comprise of 5 members. And we barely quorate, but we are quorate. But it is important that we are able to appoint more board members so that we don't run the risk of the board having to make a decision and the board is not quorate on that particular meeting. In terms of the fit and proper person, as I say, that's also something that we feel it's important that actually this committee make that determination. The Act doesn't provide us a definition of fit and proper. And also in terms of what would be construed as misconduct, it's got to be read in terms of this Act. You know, I don't think you're going to get so it's deliberately, I don't know whether it's a good thing, but this committee has to decide within the application of this Act, what would be defined as misconduct, what would be defined as something that would be of concern to this committee in terms of what the board member has to do. So I'm just giving hypothetical examples. In previous, you know, probities we've done, somebody, you know, would have an Edgar's account that's outstanding or something like that. Now, it's for this committee to decide whether that is of concern to you, that somebody has missed to make a payment on an Edgar's account or something like that. But that would be the kind of things that this committee would need to apply its mind as to whether that would constitute something significant enough to warrant somebody not being considered for that. But obviously if it's serious crime, you know, that would be identified. And also that's why we do the probities, to check, you know, that it's not just a matter of self-declaration. I hope I have answered the questions. If not, I apologize for missing something.
Honorable America, are you going to address some of the other questions?
Perhaps just to add that question 5 on the disqualification, it begins to sketch the fit and proper in terms of who would be excluded. So section 5 of the Act, as well as just to add again on the issue of the term of office of the board, that the Act does not specify. At the moment it's silent on a term of office of the board. It speaks of a term of office of a member, which is actually prescribed. So again, the committee would have to exercise its discretion on what that actually means in practice, insofar as the appointment of a board for a term.
Establish
whether someone was removed for specific misconduct or criminal reasons, stuff like that. On that, when we conduct the probity checks, the probity checks are supposed to ground truth the responses that the member applicant has actually provided in the application form, and to find out if there are any red flags in terms of an area as such as that actually mentioned by the honourable member. So the property checks hopefully begin to reveal those things if they have been maybe not disclosed by the applicant.
I'm going to allow for another round of questions, and then after that I'm going to put the group to the legal position of the eyes for it. Before we go to
No, thank you, Chair. I would think, Chair, it's not a question now, given the responses. For me, I think maybe it's a matter that the committee must consider, because I would think the notion of gender sensitivity is not being defined. I think it's something that we need, whether we ask both the legal opinion from the department or also our own legal department, so that we talk about something that we can measure. So if it is there, what it means is just a physical appearance, and I mean gender in today's discourse is something very in broad terms, so it must be clear, so that tomorrow we both as a government, you know, and through the public, we are not seen to be sort of overstretching in terms of what that mandate is. And that's why it can also be a quantitative measure to say, are you talking about gender sensitivity in terms of the number of those that are a particular gender? So those in terms of interpretation for me are very critical, so that you don't just throw something into the act that becomes highly ambiguous, you know, and open to legal loopholes. But I'm just moving for that, Chair. But I would think also it would be important for us, because there's a number of things that also as we engage that become clear on this specific responsibility that the committee is supposed to be engaging in. The committee must satisfy itself. The committee may or may not interview. So for me, it becomes a very tricky thing, you know, because it needs to be somewhere a bit clear at what point it needs be. That's why I'm saying the role of the committee, you know, has to be clarified somewhere, you know, about what are the things that as a committee, given your general role of oversight that would have played ordinarily, but with specifics here, because there are particular expectations in as far as the standing committee's concern during the process of appointment of board. And that for me needs to be something that, whether it is not, whether it's something that gets to be defined in the act itself or somewhere, I think we need to have some kind of clarity and guidelines on such, so that it is not a matter of, you know, we believe that we need to do or not do this, and what are those parameters of the committee. I think I'm satisfied with the answer about the appointment, because I think the notion of experience and ensuring succession is a noble thing, but I'm still not understanding the rationale, because it doesn't mean, you know, if, like, as a standard practice, I mean, the standard practice that you appoint boards for 3 or 4 years, and it means at any given point in time, you know, the people as they're signing their contract, they know that they're here for 3 years. Obviously, when they need to exit, you can't stop them. But all I'm saying, I think what we're interested to understand is that as this particular board, are we in sync with that particular approach that says people come in at this point, they exit at this point, because the notion of keeping those will always be there. It is done in most boards. You ensure in your board process, you in the appointment of boards, that you either say 30% or 40% should be, you know, you are retaining as part of institutional memory. So I'm just saying, I think I get that, but still, that's rational for me, because I take into cognizance that we need to ensure that there is continuity, but also there is change in the board. And perhaps, Chair, we'll have to consider 23 years later, from a legislation of 1996, given the dynamism, you know, fourth IR and other things, should we still, or should we consider amendments to the Act? And I'm not saying the conversation of this board, we're just looking at the board vacancies now, but maybe something that we need to consider as we finalize our own resolutions on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. One thing that has not been said, I think one of the most important tasks of the board is to appoint the CEO. And for that, I want to read into requirements for board members that they should have management experience, that they should have served either on another board where they have been gaining experience in the application and selection processes of senior staff members, or in the business world where they should have been able to again select people for appointment to senior positions. And I would like to put that to the committee, that we keep that in mind, although it is not explicitly stated in the requirements, that, as I've said before, we have two candidates, the same, let's call it profile in terms of legal qualifications, etc., that we then consider the person with experience of appointing senior people overseeing the operations of business, so to say, be it a government department or a board.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my question is, my concern, question, is that we are presented with 13 potential candidates. Now, I make no evaluation on the candidature of those applicants, but the concern is, why would there so many others excluded? Why don't we have access to those candidates also, so that we could evaluate whether the 13 that is being presented to us are the most suitable, considered the most suitable candidates, or perhaps there's a reason behind it, and maybe in closing committee we will get proper contextualization of the list that is being presented to us, but it is certainly of concern at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you. Before the final answer, I think what might give a little bit of clarity is that the short listing of candidates will complete in the first term. And where the process ended essentially, as the Member for Election Department correctly, is that now we have the shortlist of candidates that were completed, and then we're continuing the process of the recommendations on who we think out of the shortlist should be recommended by the House through the Minister to the Executive Council. But the Department will also maybe correct me how you heard.
No, that's the correct turn of events in terms of where we are now, as you've described it. I just want to, in terms of experience, that is one of the criteria that we do look in terms of managerial or board member experience. That's one of the factors that we have looked at in terms of coming up with a shortlist. In terms of the question, why can't we look at the long list? No, we do provide the committee with the full list of the 48. We haven't done so yet, but we do when we give you the full pack of information, because we still have to provide you with the application forms of the 13 people. But we don't provide you with the full 48 application forms, but we will give you a list of the 48 people and how we've scored them. You will get that information as part of the complete pack.
Just to add that Section 4 of the regulations gives the power to shortlist to the accounting officer of the responsible department, in this case provincial treasury. So the shortlist that you have of 13 names has been compiled by the accounting officer in terms of the regulations.
Thank you. Before we move on, I'd like the two opinions that I... So the first opinion I requested was procedural. The second opinion I requested was legal. This was emailed previously, and it's also in your packs. The first question I asked was whether the Sixth Parliament may continue with this process. The reason I asked that question specifically was because I knew that legislation lapsed, but I wanted to find out, okay, but if all business lapses before the House does business also lapse, and then we have to start from over. But when I received the opinion back, it was indicated that the committee was at the department. The committee at the time already essentially relieved itself of what it had to do until that stage, got to the department, and we only got the formal referral in the Sixth Parliament that we're allowed to go on with the business because it was formally referred in the Sixth Parliament. But you have that procedural opinion if you have any questions. In the legal opinion, we received the referral letter after I sought the legal opinion. So in the legal opinion, you'll see that it says that it's not been formally referred, that is correct. You will also find in your pack as emailed previously that the referral letter dated and all the procedures in that regard. There was another point in the legal opinion that I just want to highlight. The advertising, we got the answer from that. There was a question I asked about the advertising. In terms of, for example, the minimum for candidates, in terms of requirements, and so on, the legal opinion came back saying that the department gives us X, Y, Z, and the committee, we might be able to then ask for the department how to get to X, how to get to Y, how to get to Z, and get information in that regard. Ordinarily, the legal opinion we got back from Lady Residence on page 4 is essentially the same as the opinion that was previously done by the department. I must admit I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the committee deciding on ordinary residence, and that might be something that we look at in the recommendation. The legal opinion from the Western Cape also indicated that all four vacancies can be made. We have a choice to do so. And then also I sought an opinion in one of my questions on regulation, and regulations are written by the department, not laws, you know. And in the regulation, sub-regulation 2 of the regulations, it said that we, quote, submit a final shortlist of, blah, 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 to the responsible minister for submission for consideration to the Executive Council. And that was very interesting to me because it essentially means the board is accountable to the Executive Council, which is the whole cabinet, and not the Minister of Finance. And just in terms of the roles, I also found that a bit problematic. So we can also maybe look at discussing that when we get to our reporting. And that is essentially the legal opinion. And I concur also with Honourable Nkondlo that the currently, based on the legislation we have on gambling and the racing board, there's a lot of gaps that we need to really look at. Questions on definition. There's a lot of procedural questions, who people account to, things like that. And I think that while that is not our current exercise, that if we do have any questions that come up, that we can consider that for possible future resolution in the recommendation when we made the shortlist recommendations to the House. On that note, I would like to request for the committee to be in camera in order for us to be briefed on the probity report. I'll now request anyone who is not briefed into the department, anyone who is not here procedurally assisting the committee, and anyone that is not a member or an alternate of the committee to please leave the room until we indicate the committee.